Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and welcome tonight. We're doing another episode of the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. We do this every Monday night at 7 o'clock on FridayOn.tv. For the last 25 years, I've done lots and thousands of interviews, literally on podcasts and seminars and things like that. And I've always talked about vaccines, but being a physician for being an ER doc that was the head of a level two trauma center for over 12 years and being in integrative medicine now since 1996, there's so much more to talk about. We have really great guests that come on every Monday night to talk about things that are on your that are all about your health. We have a very busy practice in Cleveland, Ohio. If you're anywhere close, we hope to see you sometime soon. So tonight we have our monthly special guest, Twyla Braze. And we'll be right back, and I'll make an incredible introduction. We've got great things to talk about. You won't want to miss this episode. Sit tight. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Thank you for being here with us tonight on the Tenpenny Files on Your Health. Tonight, we are speaking with our monthly guest, Twyla Braze. Twyla is the president and co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, CCHF, a patient-centered, privacy-focused, free market policy organization established in Minnesota, I think I have 23 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, but it's at least 20 years ago, to protect patient and doctor freedom. Her efforts have led to an amazing result in the national law requiring parental consent for research using newborn DNA, the national campaign exposing HIPAA for the data sharing rules that it really is. It's not about privacy, and for the development of the wedge of health freedom and patient and the patient toolbox, which we talked about extensively last week or the last time she was on. If you missed that show, it's here available in the archives on Brighteon, and it's also available on my podcast, on my Substack, which is drtenpenny.substack.com. And so tonight we're going to talk about some amazing things. So since Twyla has been here before, I'm going to cut her introduction short so that we can cover all the amazing things that we have to talk about. Twyla, thank you so much for being here with me again on our monthly update, because you have so much important information to talk about.
Well, I'm always glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So let's start with, There's an increase in cyber attacks on the healthcare system. I guess that's going on, and that puts the healthcare system and health data. And I know that the cyber attacks are to get the data, because data is the new gold. And what does that do to patients, and how does that put them at risk?
Well, I think let's look at the biggest cyber attack at the moment, which has to do with Change Health. Now, I don't know whether your listeners know anything about Change Health, because it's something that's huge that's operating in the background of the healthcare system. Essentially, when you want your insurance claim to be sent to your insurer from your doctor's office or from the hospital, Change Healthcare is doing that for many, many, many of the hospitals and clinics around the country. And then when you want your doctor or your hospital to be paid, Change Health is also transitioning and transferring that money. And so I think it was February 21st where Change Healthcare got hacked by a group called Black Cat. and it was a ransomware attack. I can't remember exactly how much money that Change Healthcare eventually paid these ransomware attackers. But essentially, it shut down a lot of the transfer system within the healthcare system so that the claims weren't being sent and the money wasn't being sent. And there was $1 billion a day that practitioners and hospitals around the country were losing because they weren't able to send the claims and they weren't able to get the money. Now, a lot of the American population doesn't even know this was happening. But the fact of the matter is, this is as a result of making everything digital these days, forcing us into digital medical records, HIPAA, which took away all our privacy so that all of our data can be shared and hooked together in networks and networks of networks. And so we have been made vulnerable by our own government so that this kind of a shutdown could happen. You didn't feel the shutdown necessarily, but your doctors and your hospitals did, to the point that the U.S. government was asking United Health Group, who owns Change Healthcare, asking United Health Group if they would, you know, facilitate loans for doctors and hospitals and healthcare systems in order to keep them functioning, because they weren't getting any money. And so this is, I think the point, you know, for me, the point of all of this is to show how vulnerable us and our entire healthcare system has been made by the U.S. government, by the federal officials, by the Obama administration, by, you know, the administrations before that. I think it was the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, everybody trying to get us all into digital. And so this kind of attack can be facilitated nationwide, crippling our hospitals and our healthcare practitioners.
Well, you know, and it's going to be more and more digital things as they want to go to more and more digital IDs. You know, they've moved this real ID thing forward several times now. Now it's out till May of 25, you know, that you have to have your digital ID. I mean, each time I've just passed, I haven't really gotten it. And so they're moving that out. And then it's, you know, your vaccine passports and, you know, all these other things. And the more and more things that are digital, we do all of our banking online now. I mean, we have our phones and everything on our phone is digital. And so we are, the whole system, all the whole kit and caboodle is in really great danger of this kind of hacking, which kind of brings me to the next topic, which it was about, you know, Walmart is making healthcare choices for their employees. Now, how is that data from their healthcare, from their employees, going to get fed into that system? You know, I listened to a Christian radio station online. I have music in my house, and it's hooked up to the internet, and I listened to 88.3. It's Z88.3, and they have a downloadable app that I listen to in my car, and then I listen to it online here all the time. It's just, they have a really nice playlist and I like their announcers. It's Z88.3. I'll give them a little plug. And they're out of Orlando. And I've heard them multiple times talking about that at Walmart now, at least in Orlando. I don't know if it's all across Florida, and I don't know if it's in other places across the country, but Walmart is setting up mammogram stations that you don't need to get an order from your doctor. You can just go in and get your annual mammogram done. And it's a digital, high quality mammogram. I mean, are more and more of these big box stores, and I know Amazon and Google have played around with healthcare. What's happening with Walmart, and what's going to happen with them making their decisions and doing things like this?
Well, you know, Walmart is big enough to try and be innovative in the healthcare space, and healthcare itself as an industry is one of, if not the largest industry in the country. And so if you want to play in that space and profit in that space, you know, I'm sure that executives are thinking about what they can do. But the other thing that Walmart is thinking about is all its employees and how to decrease their costs for providing health insurance to these employees. And so what one of the things that Walmart is doing is it's picking places around the country to send their employees, so for different things. So I was just looking at the list. So I'm just going to look down to look at the list here for just a second. So if you need heart surgery, you can go to the Cleveland Clinic. If you need spine surgery, you'll go to Emory in Atlanta. Hip and knee replacements will be at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore. Mayo Clinic for transplants, spine surgery, cancer care. So this is what they have come up with. They've contracted with these healthcare systems to do these certain things, which they must consider centers of excellence for these certain things. And so they've come, whatever the contract is, they have a contract with these clinics and these facilities to do these kind of procedures for their employees. And I'm sure it's at a significantly reduced rate, or they wouldn't have come up with this contractual, you know, agreement. This is like, you know, just direct contracting rather than going through an insurance company per se. And of course, Walmart is self-insured, which would mean that they pay for all of their medical bills through their own bank account. So then they can just pick, you know, this is where you're going to go, and this is where you're going to go for these kind of services.
Interesting. I was just trying to pull it up here while you were talking. There is a organization. Why do you stop? Don't do that. there's an organization called the Loan Institute, and they have done all sorts of research on the fact, and they published huge studies on the fact that stents don't work. The number of stents that they actually looked at in the number of hospitals, I think it was, their database was over 200,000 data points. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was a large sampling, and that they had determined that at least 25% of all stents were placed that really didn't need to be done. And they have the world's worst sort of person on their website. And they have one doctor who has placed 90 stents in one person. Mm. And they say that stents don't work. And they were looking at how many billions of dollars per year, because placing one cardiac stent is about $75,000 to $78,000. An open heart surgery is $123,000 before you deal with any complications or anything like that. That's the nation average. So if Walmart is sending people to the Cleveland Clinic, as it turned out, because of course, being in Cleveland, I looked up, you know, what was their overuse rate, and it was 32%. So a third of all stents that the Cleveland Clinic puts in, because they have huge cath labs over there. And I say they always put people on statins to feed their cath labs. I mean, that's been going on for a while. And that 32% of the stents that they placed were placed unnecessarily. And so it's interesting that Walmart is going to look around for places to send people like that. They should probably be reading studies about what works and what doesn't work if they're trying to save money with their employees, I guess.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that the very best way to save money is to put the cash in people's hands and let them make the cost-benefit decisions, right? And the problem is, like with those stents, if you were paying the cost of putting 90 stents in your body, well, you wouldn't do it. And right. You would be asking the doctor to, you know, tell you exactly why, you know, what's the rationale here? And it doesn't really cost that much, because even the figures that you mentioned, those are not actual costs, right? Those are charges. And I'll just, you know, say a number here that for your listeners that they can kind of keep in their mind when it comes to costs versus charges. So I was talking to a physician who's Medicare age, but has the means to, you know, pay for his own care in cash. And so he always pays in cash. He doesn't like the Medicare system. And so, but he's a physician. And so he needed some procedure done. He figured out what the cost, he called to see what the cost was. And he was told that it was $110,000. And he said, that's ridiculous. I'm a physician. I'm paying cash. That's a ridiculous charge. And she said, oh, you're a physician and you're paying cash? Oh, well, for you, it's
$11,000. Oh, my goodness.
So the fact of the matter is, whatever they say the cost is, there are reasons for them to say, like you said, the term $123,000. What's the real cost? And the thing is, if the patient had the cash in hand, they would have a real cost plus profit. But because they knew they'd have to really compete and you weren't in a system and you could go anywhere with your money, they'd have to give you a reasonable price. Today, we don't have reasonable prices. And so, you know, the problem is that you're not paying for your own care. And so you're not getting an affordable price. And so there's a lot of gaming of the entire system because most people are not paying for their own care.
I think that's really wise, Twyla, about the difference between cost versus price, because I think that's the cost, like I said, the cost of a stent is $77,000. Well, that's just to place the stent. That's not the doctor's fee, the anesthesiologist fee, the hospital fee. If you have any complications, what that fee is for long-term prescriptions that come after that. What if you have any complications? Same thing with the bypass surgery. So I think that's a really important distinction, cost versus price. Mm-hmm. And either one of them are outrageous.
Well, and what if the anesthesiologist didn't even get paid because Medicare comes at the end and looks at it retroactively and says, you know, I don't think that you should have done that surgery. So I don't think that surgery should have been done. So, you know, we're not going to pay for any anesthesia. So the anesthesia was done, the surgery was done, but Medicare comes in the back and says, yeah, no, we don't think it was worth it. So you don't get paid. I mean, that happens too. So I don't think patients understand that kind of thing happening either.
Yeah. And I think that people think, and I know this from my years in the ER, that, you know, if somebody walks into the ER and they've got their Medicaid card or their Medicare card or even their United Healthcare card, they look at it like it's a credit card. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to give you my card, my insurance card, and if the bill is $5,000, well, it's going to go on my card and Medicare, Medicaid, or United Healthcare is just going to pay for it. They don't understand all of these other innuendos, and particularly the retroactive denials, which are just awful.
Yeah. You know, I heard about a bill for an MRI, and the bill for the MRI, not the bill, I'm sorry, the cost for the MRI, or I should say the charge for the MRI was about $3,000. And if the patient paid cash, the charge would go down to about $1,300. But if the patient was Medicare, the charge went down to $298.
Oh my goodness.
And then when the person got the bill back, you know, they had to pay $245 because Medicare paid 40, whatever that amount was, right? So, you know, when you're thinking about cost versus charge versus price, those are really important distinctions and negotiated rates, right? And so, of course, if you were paying cash, you would find out exactly what the price is and everything would be transparent and all the prices would come down to you, the payer, because right now all the prices are high because the payers have a lot of money in their pocket, whether they're huge insurers or whether they're the government. And so anybody who is paying cash today, they need to try to negotiate the price, and they often can. But still, look at the difference between $1,300 for that $3,000 MRI versus, you know, $298 is all that was allowed to be charged by Medicare. And then Medicare paid only like $40 of that, and the patient had to pay the rest, or their Medigap policy had to pay the rest.
And I think that it's that the consumer thinks, and I thought this too. I mean, I'm a physician, but I'm a consumer too, you know, that the cost of a test is just standardized. And my first introduction to this was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. There was a company here in Cleveland that they had, they were like a pre-screening company to a certain degree. So if you were a patient and you were either a high deductible or you're going to pay out of pocket anyways, and you needed to go get let's say an MRI of your knee. So you would want to go to the place that was the least expensive because you had to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So they would call this company. And as it turned out, in their research, and it was really hard to do because nobody wanted to tell them. Nobody really wanted to tell them, you know, what the real cost was of an MRI, right? But the ranges, that was the difference between about $150 and $2,000, just like what you said, you know, for the same procedure in the same place. And that's, you know, that's the thing that kind of drives me nuts. It's the same thing that kind of drives me nuts about the cancer industry. I mean, I thought, you know, I've been a physician since 1985. I really thought that the reason you went through all of this diagnostic stuff, if you have, like, say, a breast lump, and then you get a mammogram and an ultrasound, and you get an MRI, and you get a biopsy, and then you get a typing, and then you do, you know, put in a little pin, and then you do all of this nodal transection, all that stuff. So you get the diagnosis of ductal carcinoma stage 3, mm-hmm. that once you went through all of that expense and all that trauma to get that diagnosis, that you would go, somebody somewhere would go over to a shelf and pull off a book and you would open it up and it would say, ductal carcinoma stage 3, here's your recipe for your treatment. Oh no. I mean, there could be 20 different treatments for that same diagnosis, depending on the doctor you saw. A combination of IV chemotherapy, a combination of just a lumpectomy, a combination with oral chemotherapies that there are. There's no standardization at all. And so I'm saying that, and I'm sure you knew that, and I don't know how much our listeners actually knew that, but if you get a diagnosis of anything, get a couple of opinions before you just go with one, because there's no standardization of treatment of care. None. Which kind of comes up to the point about this ivermectin ruling that they did. Because we're talking about treatment and standard of care, so we might as well roll into pre-treatment and how they denied it. You know, of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and vitamin D and zinc and all these other things. Talk a little bit about this ruling that just came down and how the FDA lost their lawsuit, but not really. Explain to people.
Yeah, this was a lawsuit brought by three physicians, and they said that the FDA was practicing medicine when they were putting out their papers that said, you know, you shouldn't take ivermectin, or their tweet that said, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, come on, y'all, stop it, right? And so this made it, I can't remember if it made it up to the appeals court. It's been into a number of them, and they have won at several of them. But now there was a settlement announced on March 21st, a settlement. And so they have to take down all these papers and these tweets. Well, not all these papers. There's not many papers for them to take down, but there are tweets for them to take down, and Instagram and Facebook, all their social media, where they're claiming, they're denouncing ivermectin. And the judges basically said, you know, the FDA is not a physician. You know, they can give their opinions about, you know, scientifically, but they can't denounce, and they can't, you know, say statements that really lead to it being like they're practicing medicine. But for me, this was an insufficient ruling. Because they, you know, lots of people have died because of what they did. Their tweet led to this essentially a media firestorm of shutting that ultimately led to doctors and hospitals and pharmacies refusing to provide it, to dispense it. Hospitals took it off of their formularies, and it just became virtually impossible for a doctor to even provide it for a patient. So to me, you know, lots of people died, and this did not even talk about the fact of how the FDA has really limited the liberty for the doctor and for the individual, and has limited lives and cost lives all across the nation. That was never really part of the lawsuit. That's, you know, they should have had more than their hand slapped. There should have been more there, because people have died. And, you know, even today, despite this ruling, I do not think that there are doctors who are going to be willing today to put their name on an ivermectin prescription. There are still doctors being pursued by medical boards. It's still difficult. I realize it's only 5 or 6 days beyond, but I still do not believe that there's going to be freedom to give and dispense ivermectin. So I don't think it went far enough, and I don't think our freedom has been restored. Yeah, they got their hand slapped, but we didn't get liberty and freedom back. Not yet. No,
not at all. Yeah, and I pointed to myself, because I'm still in the battle with my state medical board. Mm. We've kind of got them pinned up against the wall. I'll mention that a little bit more when we come back after the break. And I want to talk a little, 2 things about the CDC. I mean, our 3-letter agencies in this country are just out of control. And it's really despicable to me that all of these people who shut us down, locked us up, caused millions of people to die, they lied to us. There hasn't been a single arrest. Fauci's still walking on the streets. All these sorts of things are that we need to stay in the news. So we're going to come right back. We're going to have a break, quick break right here. We're going to come right back. We're going to have more to talk about tonight with Twyla Braze on Your Health. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero, could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with, because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. There are an awful lot of people that are affiliates for Mike Lindell because we all really appreciate what he does for this country. We appreciate the hard work that he does, and we appreciate his products. He has more than 200 products in his store, everything from pillowcases and comforters to doggy beds and to wonderful slippers and bathrobes. There's something for everybody and something for everybody in each age group. I mean, one of the things that I really like a lot are the pillowcases, the children's Bible story pillowcases that I just think are such a great way when you tuck your child into bed at night to use these pillowcases that they come from his store to start to tell the story about Adam and Eve and Noah and the Ark and different things. And they're colorful and they're really pretty. So from children all the way up to your gentlemen that want to have like nice slippers or to your dog, the doggy beds and things are just wonderful. So my pillow is a great place to shop for just about anything that you want. And if you use our affiliate code DRT, that helps us, that can benefit us, that helps Mike Lindell, and you'll get a great product for anybody that you're shopping for. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is the Brighteon.tv show, the 10 Penny Files on Your Health. Tonight, we're having our monthly update with Twyla Braze talking about politics and government and things that you need to know about that you're never going to hear about in the mainstream news of what's going on with some of our three-letter agencies. We're just talking about the FDA and the ivermectin ruling that we didn't really win, but they had to eat a little bit of crow. Bringing Twyla back on, I want to talk a little bit about another three-letter agency that we have here is the CDC. I just got an alert today from the California Osteopathic Board. It's a little thing that they send out that says that we are now up to 45 cases of measles. 45, and they want everyone who's coming into California from outside the country to be quarantined because of measles. It's like, first of all, measles is not a deadly disease. It's a rash, a fever, and some conjunctivitis that comes and goes in 10 days, leaving behind a lifetime of immunity. And 45 cases, I mean, how many people died in car accidents on California highways last weekend, you know, in comparison? I mean, give this like real numbers. So now they're pushing for, this is a big push for the measles vaccine again. I mean, I couldn't remember the time. I remember in 2015 when they did this and California lost its medical, its religious exemption or its medical exemption at that time. I don't remember between 2015 and now when they did that, but here we go again. And one other, so talk a little bit about what's happening with this measles vaccine push.
Well, I think this is all about the public health entities trying to reestablish their authority across the country, because they understand and they have publicly said that they have lost a lot of public trust, and thus it should be because they've never recanted. They have never apologized. They have never done anything to show that they care, that their lockdowns led to so much tragedy, that the loss of access to life-saving repurposed drugs led to so many deaths, that the whole push for these genetic therapies called the COVID shot, that has led to so much injury. There's so much injury, and now we are seeing excess deaths. So they've never acknowledged any kind of responsibility for everything that has happened. But they have acknowledged that they have lost a lot of public trust across the country. So I think they're drumming up, you know, this in order to try to get the public to pay attention again and think that there's something that's disastrous that they need to do something about, you know, getting vaccinated before they ever take an international flight, you know, that sort of thing. That's what the CDC is now pushing. But I think, you know, with what you said about measles is not a deadly disease. So I did find an article that talked about, you know, way back when there was a time when there were like 3 to 4 million cases. I think this was before the measles vaccine, 3 to 4 million cases that were reported. And there were 400 to, let me see, it was 400,000 cases that died. However, lots of those died from secondary infections, you know, like pneumonia and encephalitis. And what this article went on to say was there's lots of measles, more measles than that were underreported. So the deaths are not typically underreported, right? It's just the cases. And so really lots and lots and lots of measles without death. And then the deaths that did happen, a lot of them came from secondary infections. And who knows about what kind of conditions those children may have had, you know, in advance, any kind of other, you know, pre-existing conditions that made them more vulnerable as well. So it is not the deadly disease that people like to talk about it as.
The real stats on that, Twyla, go back to 1962. 1963 is when the measles vaccine was released. You know, and in 1962, the year before the measles vaccine came out, it was either 62 or 63, it was the year before the measles vaccine came out, the death rate from measles was 2 per million. Two cases per million incidents of fever, cough, rash, and conjunctivitis. And then the measles vaccine came out in in 1963 or 64 after that. So even before the vaccine came out, the death rate, so I don't know where you saw that, about 400,000, but that's extraordinarily high. Okay. And somebody made that up, because I've got the actual documentation from that. I've got the original document that shows the death rate from measles was 2 per million before the vaccine even came out. Now, the young doctors that are diagnosing measles now have never seen a case of measles before in their entire life. You know, they grew up, they probably didn't have measles. They probably don't know anybody that had measles. They're young pediatricians who are seeing kids that come in and they got a cough and a rash and they're like, oh, they got measles, they're going to die. No, they're not. Give them a little bit of vitamin A and vitamin D and some chicken soup and, you know, ride it out and they'll be just fine. So this is another thing where they're mass pushing a vaccine and trying to gain credibility. But at every turn, Twyla, they are losing credibility. I saw this on a tweet today from RFK Jr. that apparently somebody had issued a FOIA request for a paper to the CDC on the jabs plus myocarditis. And they had issued a 148-page paper from the CDC, and 100%, every single word of that paper, when they requested it on a FOIA request, was redacted. And he was, and the reason he had put this out in a tweet, he was talking about how ridiculous and lack of transparency it was, and who had ever heard of such a thing that you go through the whole FOIA process and you get 100% redacted paper back from a taxpayer-funded organization, which is the other thing that drives you crazy. All these three-letter agencies, all their employees are on our payroll, and they are exactly doing whatever they can to be against us.
So this is like, I think it was ICANN, maybe. I can't remember exactly which organization, but it seems like it might have been ICANN who actually sued to get all the on the CDC's COVID V-safe system, where they had 10 million people reporting a post-COVID shot. And then they decided to just shut down that system. And somebody asked for the information from that. And so they gave some basic numbers, right? But they didn't give all the text and all the words that people were saying, you know, when they would report how they were doing. And so I think it was ICANN who sued to get that. And there's 7.8 million text messages, I think, that they are now going to have access to. And they will see what these people actually said about what happened to them after the COVID shot.
Yeah. And so for the listeners, how that works is like, if you want to go into the VAERS database, and you, and what you're talking about is a vaccine safety database, a vaccine safety data link is what that's called. But if you go into the VAERS system and you want to report an adverse event, they give you symptoms you can check, like a sore arm, fever, cough, lethargy, you know, something like that. And then they give you a 250 character. It's like in the old days of Twitter, right? You have a little box that you have 250 characters, which means 250 letters that you can write in there some of your other symptoms, including, my daughter died, you know, all that different things that you could write in there of all the, or had a seizure, or, you know, was out of work for 2 weeks. All of that stuff, all of that data at the bottom, and all they give you is 250 characters to write in there. Well, that's what I can sued for, was because all that the CDC had given them was the collated data of all these little check marks of these mild symptoms that people had, like a cough or a sore arm or a fever. But now they have all that data at the bottom to sort through, and they're really seeing how many people had ended up in the hospital, how many people had seizures, how many people had heart attacks, strokes, how many people died because they ended up in that little box. So we're going to get some real better. It won't be all of it, but it'll be better. And then they, at one point in time, I don't know where they are now, maybe they stopped adding information, but they were 4 months behind on adding people. If people went into VAERS and wanted to report a side effect, it was 4 to 5 months. If I went in to report one before, I would see my number and my name come, my case number come up. So the data would be entered. So they put a throttle on how much of the data was even entered into those databases by slowing down the data entry that was happening. So these people need to be held accountable and they need to go to jail. And I think some of them need to be tried for murder. You know, they really do. And that's Peter McCullough's been talking about that, which brings up to what, you know, about the whole thing with Senator Johnson and his vaccine panel. What's going on with that? Tell people a little bit about what that was about.
So Senator Johnson held, I don't know, it's his third or his fourth panel where he does it all on his own of, you know, in the U.S. Senate, holding this kind of a panel discussion where he brings in people who have been injured. He brings in experts who have information that is not being able to get out there because nobody wants to listen to it. And so I believe this was a four-hour time of people testifying to him as part of this panel discussion about their various perspectives about what has been happening. So, you know, it's incredibly interesting because, you know, a lot of people out there think that, well, COVID's done. You know, everything is done. Well, it's not done. And there's so many new things that are coming up or being discovered, or people who are being injured and different kind of injuries and the long COVID and what's working and what isn't working, or, you know, just finding out information in those databases, or like Kevin McKernan, who is finding out more about different problems with the vaccines. You know, frame shifting is one of the things that he came up with, or the plasmid, the plasmid DNA. And so there are new things being found. And if you consider the fact that the public health folks still are pushing to have this shot and everybody to get the shot, if you consider that there's like, I think it's 45 or 48 universities that are still requiring the shot for, young people to come in and get education through the college. So it's definitely not done, you know, and people are still being ousted from their positions. And so as much as the American people would like to move forward and think that COVID is over, I still think it is public health who are still getting themselves to a position where they still want to be able to assert this kind of control in the future. And so it's really important for everybody to get out as much as possible about everything that happened, the relationships that led to this. Like you said, Fauci is still walking around free. And, you know, there's a lot of people who can't walk around anymore because of the push for the shot and the fact that they were going to lose their job or lose access to their children because, or their grandchildren because their children insisted on them getting the shot to see their grandchildren. So there's just a lot of coercion, and we have to get to the bottom of that coercion. And Senator Johnson has been the one who has led the way to try and get as much out on the public record as possible.
Yeah. And, you know, it's almost like every day, you know, I put out the 40 mechanisms of injury, how the COVID shots can make you sick or could kill you. That was in June of 21. And we just did a big promotion with Mike Adams about that, that you can get that. And you really should listen to that because it shows you what the early data showed from the very beginning. And there have been more than 1,000 peer-reviewed studies that have come out since that time and have showed all the problems associated with the vaccines. You know, Ed Dowd continues to put out information about the increasing COVID deaths. I mean, how they're trying to get us to accept the fact that soccer players just drop over dead. I mean, it just happens. It just happens all the time that they, you know, these young, healthy at the top of their game, young, you know, 20-something men, you know, they just drop over dead. No, nothing. Move along. Nothing to look at here. I got this letter today, which I think was just, I mean, somebody sent me this morning. I'm just going to read you the headline. It's dated today, and it says, Pope Francis has warned that Christians who refuse to take the dangerous mRNA vaccine are heretics who will be judged harshly by God. Unbelievable. Isn't that just, I mean,
is so unbelievable. And then you have somebody, and I'm guessing that nobody in your listening audience, unless they listen to this particular interview with Tucker, will have heard the thing that I'm going to say next. So Tucker talked with Brett Weinstein, and just given what the Pope has said here, this is an important thing to like weigh this. If you don't have enough stuff to weigh, listen to what Brett Weinstein said. And at the very end of his interview with Tucker, and the Tucker was interviewing him on the Darien Gap in Panama. So you wouldn't expect what came up to come up at the very end of this interview. But he was talking about having run into a camp of Chinese men, about 120, all military age, all getting either having just crossed through the Darien Gap or about to do so to enter the United States. And that brought him to COVID. And he said, I wonder, this is a second phase of COVID. And Tucker says, that might have been when Tucker said, what do you mean? And he just talked about the fact of people who have, he's just thinking about China and what China did. People who have more than three injections, he said, have an increase of IgG4. And IgG4 downregulates the immune system, making your body less able to or less likely to react to another pathogen. And he noted that the Chinese have never given their people an mRNA vaccine and have never given their people anything that would cause them to generate spike protein in their own body. And so he said, you know, if you're creating a bioweapon, you want two populations, the population that will endure the bioweapon and the population that will not, the target, obviously. And he said it is as though these people who have had more than three shots have had a firmware update, not a software, not something that can be changed, but a firmware update where their immune systems look at the world differently today. And he said he hopes it's a mirage. He hopes he's wrong. But if he's not wrong, he said the United States government should work on neutralizing the threat as soon as possible. And Dr. Brett Weinstein, I just realized that I forgot to say, he's an award-winning PhD biologist who is the host of Dark Horse, the Dark Horse podcast. And so he's well known for all of his expertise in biology. So anyway, you know, you got the Pope saying, you know, take the shot and probably take every booster that there is. And you've got this award-winning biologist saying, you don't want a firmware update. You don't want to be put into a position where your immune system will not react the next time a pathogen comes. So, you know, there's, like I said, there's new information coming out all the time, but most of the American public doesn't even know they're not thinking about it, and they don't want to think about it, probably. But they're not looking at the resources that would let them know different things like this.
And that's why we do this show. so we can let people know. I mean, speaking of the shot, I mean, one last thing here is that, you know, the news has reported on a Harvard professor and world-renowned doctor fired for refusing the COVID vaccine at Harvard. So are there, do you think there's more and more physicians that are, you know, doing something really novel like reading?
Well, this is Martin Kulldorff, and he was one of the creators of the Barrington Declaration. And his the medical center at Harvard had already ousted him, and then the university had put him on leave, and now the university said you have to be part of the hospital for you to be part of the university, and so now we are just cutting our ties with you, and all of, because he refused to take the shot. But as he said, he's had COVID, so he's immune. And so he just absolutely refused. And like I said, COVID is not done, because this happened just like, what, a few weeks ago or something? So, you know, this hunt for the people who refuse to comply, the coercion, it just continues. And they're not ready to give it up. And we have to be ready to stand at every turn to say no and get our freedom back.
Yeah, the Exposé had an article, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday, talking about they've developed a bot that is a predictive bot for the next round of whatever pandemic that they're going to do, that will predict who is going to refuse the vaccine, and you will be tagged and tracked down by this bot. So, I mean, you know, our freedoms are getting torn away at every level. And, you know, people that want to refuse these vaccines are going to be tracked down like, you know, a dog being hunted. And we've only got a couple of minutes left, Twyla, but I want you to give a shout out to what CCHF is doing for the doing with the legislators in Iowa, since it is an election year. You know, we just had a, you know, a short-term election here in Ohio, which we did, Health Freedom did pretty well on its roster here. What are you doing with Iowa and Minnesota?
Well, we did not know about a centralized database of medical records that was about to be put into law until we heard from a legislator who basically said, I need help, you know, to stop this thing. And so what we did is we looked at the pending bill and we said, you know, this is a central database of everybody's medical records in Iowa that the legislature is planning to create. And we think this is a bad idea. They gave it a name that nobody would guess to be a centralized database, the Health Data Utility. So we wrote a letter to the governor and we gave talking points to a bunch of legislators who were concerned. And as far as we know at this moment, that bill is not going to go forth. And so we think that it has been stopped, but, you know, people are insistent on making these things happen and we're insistent on them failing.
That was in Iowa?
In Iowa.
Oh, good. Okay. And what's going on in Minnesota?
Minnesota, well, we've got several things, but there is a good bill that would make sure that our strongest in the nation law stayed strong. A Minnesota Supreme Court decision changed our law just by a ruling. And so actually a Democrat who totally supports our strongest in the nation privacy law was perturbed to see what had happened and is making sure that that she changed the law to make sure that that everybody would know that Minnesota law has to be followed, not the no privacy HIPAA rule.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we just got a couple of seconds left, Twyla. Where can people find you and your organization and your book?
Sure, they can find us at cchfreedom.org, cchfreedom.org, and they can buy the book wherever books are sold. We have now made our fourth order of the book, so more books are coming. If you run into a no books are available when you try to make an order.
Yeah, and it's called Big Brother. You guys can't really see it on the
screen. Big Brother in the Exam Room, the Dangerous Truth About Electronic Health Records.
Yeah, so you find out that HIPAA really isn't any privacy and all sorts of things.
Right.
So, Chyla, thank you so much again for being here with us again this month. I always look forward to these updates because, you know, we even had a longer list of things that we were going to talk about tonight. We just ran out of time. So I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. This will be up on Brighteon tomorrow. It will be up on dr10penny.substack.com on Thursday, so you can listen to this again. It's really important information. So thank you again, Chyla, for being here so much. I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible I close all my broadcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So come and meet me tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for morning coffee with Dr. T, open forum question and answer time. If you're on our email list, you would have got a notification to sign up. If you haven't joined our list, you can go to dr10penny.com, join our email list for that special announcement. So thank you so much for everyone being here tonight. Thank you, Hannah, for your help. Good night, everybody. Good night, and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out: Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com, and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.